Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast is brought to you by the Mosaic Life Circle, our brand new email list, which keeps you in the know about new episode releases, guest announcements, merchandise deals, and, of course, contest announcements. Speaking of which, if you join the Mosaic Life Circle this month, that is by the end of May of 2020, you will be entered to win our very first Vibe Box. What you get in the Vibe Box are two life-changing books, both handpicked by Ernie and myself, a brand new journal, and a special gift. So be sure to head online to onemosaic.life and sign up before the end of May. On top of all that, you will also get exclusive access to our brand new Full Circle Instagram TV series, which we are launching this Tuesday at 3:15 p.m. So please be sure to tune in at One Mosaic Life. And don't forget to sign up for the Mosaic Life Circle at onemosaic.life.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast, right? You could be coming back, or you could be here for the first time. And I just want to take a second to thank you guys. You know, especially if you haven't been here before and you're taking a chance, let's say, on spending an hour with a podcast that you have no idea about, or you haven't, you know, haven't heard anything from up until this point, but something convinced you to listen today. And I want to thank you for taking that chance with us, because I know no matter what walk of life you come from, where you're going in your life, or what you plan to do, this episode, this interview in particular, can have a big impact. It can bring very practical insights and also just solid inspiration to be the best person you can be. So today's interview, guys, it's Timothy Winger, and he is a writer, he's a photographer, he's a business consultant, and a self-proclaimed lover of life. The dude is solid. The first time I met him, we met over Facebook. We connected because he's a men's coach. He was men's coaching at the time, and I believe he still is doing that. But we were connecting over masculinity, the ideas of what it means to be a man, and the concepts that really tangle up in all of that. And the first time I talked to him, you know how you get like a sense of somebody before you really even know them? Well, we got on the phone, and you could just feel this sense of authority from him, this masculinity, this strong presence, but not like authority, like a corporate management authority, but the type of authority where this is a person who knows what they care about. This is a person who cares about knowing, who cares about getting it right, who cares about understanding, who's curious and has an opinion, and he's willing to share it in the best way possible and then dive into it. And that's what we did. We talked a couple times, and they were great conversations. And finally, we were like, when we started this podcast, I finally thought, holy crap, I haven't got Timothy on this. It's been quite a while since we've talked, and it's time. If you haven't heard of him, you can check out his website, themaneffect.com. I'll explain more about what that is in the podcast, but check it out. Man, this is a great episode. We dive deep. We talk about men. We talk about women. We talk about life. We talk about business. And we talk about a very challenging experience that he had this past year, a traumatic accident that required him to be bedridden, that required him to go through months of physical therapy and rehabilitation to get back to the basic functions of being a human being and the challenges that come along with that and what it took to overcome that and what it took to integrate that into his life. An incredible dude, an incredible conversation. I hope you guys take the time to listen to the whole thing and I hope you find those insights that you're looking for. So without further ado, welcome back. Thank you. And here is our episode, our interview with Timothy Wenger.
Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast.
Life is an art. Every moment a picture painted in time. The color, texture, lighting, all context. The Mosaic Life vision is to cast a warm glow on your masterpiece, highlighting the struggle while showcasing the culmination of years of hard work.
Join us for guided meditations, interviews with authors and leaders, and engaging conversation as we explore the depths of our consciousness.
All right, diving in. Welcome to another episode of the Mosaic Life Podcast. We're excited again to bring you another interview. Our voices are waking up because this morning we are recording, you know, hours before we typically record so that we could be on here with Timothy Wenger. And Trey, are you here with us?
I am here. It's a little bit different for me, but I like it. It's a change of setting, change of environment.
Yeah. It's funny that I ask if you're with us because really I was talking to you before we started officially recording. But yeah, it's good to be here this morning. I sometimes appreciate the morning because I haven't quite caught a bunch of energy from the world. And so I feel a little more peaceful. So I actually am excited about doing this now. Timothy, welcome to the podcast, man. We're really happy to have you. How are you this morning? Well, this afternoon for you. You can even tell us where you're calling in from.
I'm doing good, man. Yeah. I really appreciate you guys having me. And yeah, I'm tuned in from Belgrade, Serbia. So
Yeah. And what are you doing out there, man? What brought you, took you out there?
What took me out there? Well, as a result of pursuing my passion, so my project led me to meeting a Serbian woman through a random Facebook group. And so I moved out here to be with her.
Dude, so, that's awesome. How long have you been out there now?
Oh, probably an accumulative of maybe 14 or 15 months. So over the last 2 years.
Man, so, very cool. Yeah, man. Well, I'm excited to actually talk about your passion and what you've been working on. So Timothy and I met probably 2 or 3 years ago through Facebook. I was at the front end of building my coaching business. So I was at the point where I'm like soaking in information and meeting new people. So we got on the phone and had a conversation that really evolved around men, masculinity, and the beliefs that, you know, society have about the path of men, and then weighed them against what felt right for us. And we had a really good conversation about that. And since then we've kept, you know, in each other's lives, frequently just catching up. And so the idea of bringing you here was to include Trey into this conversation and really build a deeper conversation around what you're doing to support that purpose of men coming into the world and being, you know, who they're allowed to be and how they want to be in the world. So I'm definitely excited to dive in there. Do you want to just maybe talk a little bit about what brought you to this point? And then, you know, we can go from there. What you're doing and what brought you to this point?
Yeah, so, I mean, currently I have a consulting business for small electrical contractors across the states, but that got completely killed from the pandemic pretty much. So that's cool. And been doing some other work on my own. But my project, The Man Effect, I started that back in 2014. And just out of a pursuit of wanting to create content to answer questions that I didn't feel like were being answered, and to pursue becoming a better photographer. That was another reason. But that journey led me to quitting a really good job and pursuing my dreams of being my own business owner and being geographically independent so I could travel and here I am being geographically independent, I guess.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in, and you know, this is something I meant to mention before diving into the interview portion. The Man Effect, this is an awesome website. If you're listening to this, and it will be linked in the show notes, go check this out. What Timothy's working on and has been working on is this website where he, as a photographer, goes out and asks people, men and women, to describe, and correct me if I'm missing anything here, but to describe in one word what being a man is, or a word that describes being a man. And then he takes a picture of them. So he has this compilation of stories of men and women and ways that they see masculinity and see manhood in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a free website too.
It's cool because I think passions are a beautiful thing because they start as seeds. And if you're like willing to let them grow, they take you in different ways. And so it started out as just me burning through my family and friends, asking them questions and taking their portraits. And then it led to being on the streets and then traveling and interviewing people in other places. And then, you know, it also grew into a blog and doing video interviews and a Facebook page, and you know, so it's interesting like how things grow when you just like continue that journey.
So on that journey, you know, some of the questions, what answers were you in pursuit of? What questions were you trying to have resolutions to? What really drove you into this project?
Yeah, so questions are a power move, really, when you approach them efficiently. And so my project, the question of if you were to describe what it means to be a man in one word, what would it be and why? Like, if you were to answer that, what I'm actually doing is highlighting how much assumption we live under culturally. And I'm doing that through making you think about that topic and whittling it down to one word. And then that's an impossible task. And why did I choose that one word when there's a million words? And it's like, it's making you process all that. And so I just stumbled onto that aspect. But at the same time, for myself, when I developed that, I was really looking for strong guidance in the emotional and mental aspect of being a man. And there just wasn't anything out there. And so, my journey of questions became externalized, and through those conversations, having hundreds of conversations with people and interviewing them led me to a place of just realizing how much we live in a place of assumption. And when you actually push on that pressure point, it can be very interesting. That's kind of part of the journey, I would say. I'm not sure if that answers your question fully.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's very insightful. And I guess the first follow-up question that comes to my mind is, you're traveling abroad, you're in Serbia now, and there may be language barriers, but of course imagery transcends those barriers. And I'm just curious what effect that has. You know, for instance, if you're taking photographs of people in Syria, but you're sharing them with your family back home, how are you shaping those images so that barrier becomes a non-issue? Or I guess how much of an effect does the image have over the word in which people are using to describe what it means to be a man?
Yeah. So part of why I wanted to pursue being an entrepreneur was so that I could fund myself to travel and do interviews in a lot of different cultures. But what I think is really important in my interview process, I get people's age, their profession, and like kind of where they're from. Because what's interesting is when people see an image, we instantly project our judgments upon them. And then when you read just a basic data of who they are, it disrupts that. And then if you get someone who's actually really engaging in the answer, that's also counterintuitive, because they're like, oh, this is just a guy. Like, why would he give a good answer? Like, one of my favorite interviews was a barista from like the most hipster place in downtown Kansas City. And he gave just this beautiful like interview with interaction with me. And it's like one of my favorite ones. And it totally caught me off guard because I just went into a coffee shop and asked the random guy behind the counter. I was like, hey, can I interview you for this project? He's like, yeah, come back though in like an hour. I want time to think about this, you know? I feel like I'm going down a tangent, but
this is incredible, dude.
Yeah, bring it.
I love it.
Yeah, so I just I think the imagery is good. Also, it's painful for me, honestly, to go back and look at my original first rounds of portraits because they're just not that good, in my opinion. But sticking to it, my photography got better. Like I'm learning about positioning and focal depth, and it's. I really don't want to include, you know, makeup and all that stuff. I've really tried to just portray people how I interacted with them and how I see them. I would say 2 or 3 years ago, I actually met with this professional photographer named Dan White, incredible, incredible photographer. And he told me, he's like, I think you're hiding behind your sign of the people holding up the word. And so I started doing interviews without the sign in the portrait. And that was another level of demand of me as a photographer, because it's easy to hide behind that text like that, because that's the focus of it. But now I want the focus to be the human's face and this being who, you know, exists and thinks differently than you do. So, yeah.
That's incredible, man. Hearing you talk about this, well, first of all, just being on the website, I get this creative attachment to it because of the beauty of just the aesthetics of all of these pictures and this mosaic type form, and everyone's holding the sign and it has a word. And when you understand the concept of these pictures, it's like, oh, this is really, really cool and it's beautiful. But I'm getting like an emotional attachment to the project as a man, as I hear you talk about, you know, the reason for asking this question and what it does for people, and the way that the picture allows a person coming in to make a judgment, but then you have the interview and it blows the viewer out of their own frame of mind that they typically might be unconscious of. There's so much power to it. So it's giving me this like emotional attachment to the project. It's really cool, man.
It's very different too, you know, because it's like when the homeless man on the side of the road sitting next to the trash can gives like a really insightful answer, but the dude who's like really dressed up and just is like super shallow, it tweaks with your perception of humanity. I appreciate that.
It does, yeah. So I'm curious. So what may I tell? I want to hear more about the guy from Kansas City. You said that was the most influential interview you've done. What did he give? What answers did he give?
Well, I mean, influential, I think in an articulate way. Like he was very articulate in what he was saying. To do it justice, I would have to pull it up. But an overview of it is essentially he chose the word builder, and he was just talking about how his grandpa was like part of the Seattle Needle construction. He built a cabin for the family, and he built a family, and like he was impactful in his community. And he just listed all these things that he observed his grandfather build throughout life and in a positive way. And he just, he painted it so beautifully. It was a really nice perspective. And it was definitely not a word I would have thought. Like I thought most people would stick to, you know, integrity, strength, or warrior or something. But getting builder was fascinating. So
I love that. And I imagine hearing his reasoning, like just it's such a generic word, but the reasoning behind it really adds the depth to it. No one would say, oh, builder is such a deep word. But then he had the story that articulated integrity, strength, warrior, compassion, or all these other aspects of being a man, but into this one common word. It's really cool.
Yeah. And what was interesting too is, so like my initial interviews were just like, hey, what's a word you chose? And I didn't really ask them why. And so like my interview process changed too over the years, and it grew and it developed. And so I started asking follow-up questions like, who is the most masculine person you know? and why are they that? And I chose those words specifically because some people didn't have men in their lives. And so like it could be it, in some scenarios, it was their mom or, you know, their aunt or like whatever. And anyway, I would say maybe 50 to 70% of the time, the most masculine person they knew was the representation of the word they chose in their life. And I found that really fascinating as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It really makes sense. When we grow up, we're very focused on whatever is that attractive quality in a role model. And so for our whole mind to be around it, even as an adult, that's a whole different conversation about where our focus as children has led us to as adults. You know, something that I keep wanting to ask about, you mentioned earlier, the mental aspect of being a man. And I thought, man, that's a very powerful short piece of what you're talking about that we could even unpack deeper. I wonder what you mean by that.
Are you guys familiar with the word framing? Like how you frame yourself?
Maybe you could elaborate.
Okay. When you walk into a room, the frame you carry isn't just like, I'm not talking about like a wooden frame. I'm talking about like how you posture yourself,
sure,
how you interact with other people, how you believe you represent yourself in those moments, how you are passionate or dispassionate about things, and your opinion needs to be heard if it needs to be heard, and you're okay with being quiet. It's kind of a portrayal of confidence, but it comes from that mental state of being confident. So frame is, I'm going to kind of slaughter, it's not my niche, but essentially it helps when interacting with women if you're trying to get their phone number, but it also helps in sales if you're trying to be a professional. Depending on how you carry yourself, it's a huge deal. And that's just one part of the mental aspect of like, how do I internally believe that I'm a man, and how do I portray that self-belief, in society, I guess, you know? And so like a classic example I use, I was at a business meeting, and, there was a beautiful woman that was in the coffee shop that we were meeting at. And so I just like went over, started talking to her, had no agenda, but just like held a good frame, like an externalization of who I am, and got her number. We went out the next day, and I was just like, hey, like, did you notice like that you felt completely comfortable around me? You didn't feel all these things? She's like, oh yeah, I did. And I was just testing that, like nothing came of that date after that one, but it was just like, I was testing to see how much that influenced my interactions and opportunities. And so it was a cool, tangible way for me to measure that.
So. Yeah, that's great, man. I was just thinking on the drive here, another word that I feel like is synonymous with what you're saying is embodiment. So having a certain reception emitting a certain frequency into the world, and then having this awareness around you that allows you to see yourself from outside and then also depict it from the inside, and then just fully embody love, confidence, you know, clarity, or whatever that thing might be. Yeah.
It makes me think about a lot of Navy SEALs become authors or speakers or motivational people. But when you interact or listen to them, like they exude like a mental fortitude that they've sorted through in their own brain, because they've gone through a lot of high pressure situations and training, and they've had to just deal with that internal insecurity and just deal with it. Not that it's not gone, but it's like how they present themselves is entirely different than, I don't know, Absolutely. Someone from an art school, I guess.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I literally just started reading Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. He's one of the most inspirational ex-Navy SEALs I've ever come across. Uh-huh. That guy is truly amazing. And actually, along those lines, Timothy, I do want to ask you, because I feel like I'd be remiss if I don't. What does it mean to you to be a man?
Yeah. So my journey with this project started with me asking myself that question and taking a self-portrait. I was the first person I interviewed. And my answer was authentic. And I have been amazed over the years how that has been represented throughout my life. And I still stick to that. Like, for me, being a man is being authentic with myself and with my passions. And just, it's a very parallel to being secure in my identity and just doing what Tim does. Because I make counterintuitive decisions sometimes, like buying a one-way ticket to another country to meet someone I'd never met in person and just live there. You know, like, it's just, it can be uncomfortable for other people, the decisions I make. So,
yeah, but at the same time, you're living up to your brand. That is that not the most authentic self that you can portray, is following your passions?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I that's inspiring. Yeah.
That's kind of what I stick to at this point. Obviously, it's hard to whittle down such a vast topic, but
yeah.
Authenticity seems to be my like thing. And a lot of times people don't like authenticity. They don't want to hear your thoughts or your truth in a moment. So,
yeah. You know, I associate, it's funny how one word brought up can, I begin to start to associate other things with it. And when I think of authenticity, I do think of things like courage or warrior even, because a lot of people don't like to do it. It's very challenging, especially if this is just one of many ways, and maybe I'm projecting my own stuff, but like, if you're ever in your life, as a kid, you were, which we, most of us are, subjected, or maybe for good reason, you know, have a lot of authority figures in our lives, and just the way that they push that authority forward might feel like it's frightening, or it might've been frightening, you know? And so like,
yeah,
growing into adulthood, when we're now like out figuring out our own stuff and becoming who we are, we project that into the world, that we can't speak up because X, Y, Z would happen, or at least, yeah, our body's having that response. So there's a lot of courage and authenticity. So it's just interesting to me, as you say that, the other words that kind of dive in to the picture and take their place in what it means to be authentic,
yeah,
or anything else, builder, right?
I
wonder what are some, for you, and I'm sure we could have this conversation in 50 years and we might have an entirely different conversation, but
yeah,
but for you today, as you pursue this idea, and you're writing a book now too, so this is really interesting to me. What are some of the words or concepts that we grow up into the world with as men that we attach to that are maybe misconceptions or could be reframed a bit better? Do you notice pieces like that a lot of men might carry with them?
Yeah. So, in my book, I try to touch on this. There are a lot of how would I put it? Intentionally, there seems to be a subscription to that being a man means being this embodiment of a warrior in whatever culture you're in. And that's fine. Like, I get that. Like, it's good to be in physical shape. It's good to fight and protect. But there's lots of men that don't fulfill that just physique, period. And so they feel displaced. With that pairs along with, you can only be angry. So emotional intelligence doesn't seem to come in. You can be a businessman, but you got to kind of be an asshole to be that. And, you know, so there's just like, generally there's in our minds, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger is kind of like, he's an extreme, but like maybe half the size of him and in his physical shape, like that's what people kind of generally think of and try to become as men. And what I try to push for in that type of conversation is that the men that are most respected throughout history and have impacted humanity in a positive way the most, I would say, are men who are aligned with and know their identity and are passionate about it.
Mm.
So, like, for example, I think a great representation of someone who's an incredible man would be like Albert Einstein, right? This guy who's just out there. but he's doing his thing and he impacted the world. And you can debate whether it was a good or bad thing on some aspects of human life. But like this guy, just like he did it. Or you could use Gandhi. Like Gandhi represented a different type of masculine presence than I think people generally attribute to masculinity. So, but there's these guys who align with their identity and live by it. And I think that is, I think that's the most desirable goal that I would love to instill in people at this point. It's like, don't worry about what it means to be a man. Like, what is your identity and who is that and how do you live that? So.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And speaking of identity, I identify as a father, and my children are getting louder upstairs, so we might hear that in the amongst the conversation. What I really loved about what you said is this, or what I felt in what you said was that warrior, strength, these are all really valiant qualities of a man when paired with compassion, love, emotional intelligence, and, yeah. and these other softer qualities that it can be, that might create the most authentic and most powerful man, or at least that's what I'm taking away from it.
Yeah, I think it's an aspect, and some people, it's okay. I mean, it happens that some aspects of the muscles of our identity or who we are on this earth might be more heavily towards one thing or another. It's just for some reason that very warrior type role is the most highlighted in our culture.
So speaking of cultures and even across industries, across continents, what have you, do you see trends for the different types of answers that people give? I mean, for whatever reason, the first thing that comes to my mind is, say you've interviewed 10 lawyers. Do you see lawyers saying ambitious as the word that they use to identify themselves? What sort of trends do you see across these various scopes?
Yeah, that's a good question. That was part of my reasoning for getting people's profession and stuff. I wanted to cross-reference the data later on. At this point, the only data I really have is what words have been used the most. And so like the top five words that were used were integrity, respect, honor, love, true. Yeah, those were the top five. Yeah, true. And that's from, let me check the exact amount of interviews I have documented. I think it's like 240 something.
That's incredible.
252, yeah.
That's incredible.
That are documented. But my observation of the submissions of words people used were essentially, being a man is creating respect within your immediate and external community. And like, and what I mean by that is, if you're a loving, strong, caring man, people will respect and honor you for that. And so like most of the attributes that people listed, I feel like further that. That it presents you as a respectable man, either to your family or to your immediate community or your online community. You're a man of, you fulfill all those things. They kind of fit under that banner. So,
right. Now, do you ever get answers from people who don't have, I use this very generalized, don't have respect for men? Do you get negative answers as opposed to positive answers?
Yeah, I only have two. You could say negative, two or three, I think. The two that I'm thinking of right now, they just use the word selfish.
Okay.
And they did have negative encounters with men, which is fine. I thought I would have more negative words, honestly.
Yeah, certainly.
But I only had one old lady yell at me, be like, oh, men are chauvinists. And I was like, that's great. Like, will you let me take the interview? And she's like, no, get away from me. And I'm like, come on. Like, I actually wanted some like more stronger opinions, and
right.
It was hard. She wouldn't let me land her, but
that's because you're a man, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking is like this, a person would experience you as selfish and you just want an interview to what, you know, but she, I mean, everyone's entitled to their experience and I'm sure she has valid reasons to assume that all men are selfish or maybe she just had a bad day, you know, who knows? Trey, I'm wondering for you in particular now, what are some, and I don't know how many conversations we've had about this, but what are some qualities that you were seeking to embody or frame, you know, in your life in, as you moved into adulthood that you eventually started to change or shed for yourself as you started to grow and see the world differently? And what, maybe what qualities you started putting in its place?
Ooh, that's a complicated question. And I think you know that as you ask it, I mean, going into adulthood, that's, you know, you, if it, technically speaking, that's in your 20s. And my 20s, I think I, what's the right word? I did not take to its fullest extent. And so I spent a lot of time in my 20s doing everything that I could to enjoy life. I wanted to, I've always had an underlying idea that I'm this ambitious person who's going to go forth and take over the world through either writing or entrepreneurship. And that was just always on the back burner for me. And so I put my short-term self-gratification above all else in my quote unquote adulthood. Now, going into my 30s, that completely changed. I had a new mindset where I guess integrity would be the word that I would choose, where I started to take accountability for who I was and what my actions of both my past and present were. And so that is the foundation for which, you know, I've started to build a business and started to build friendships and relationships. So that certainly changes not only decade to decade, but year to year. And if we really dive down to a macro level, it could even be day to day. Ernie, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It sounds like there's a lot of focus change, like focus from self to outward and what you're doing for the world and then being in integrity with what you say you want to do for the world. Totally answers the question. What about you, Timothy? What are some of those aspects that you thought were important that maybe shifted or changed over your, you know, growth into adulthood and are still changing maybe?
Self-ownership. It's just something that's continually growing. Like, on what levels can I take more ownership? That's something that's definitely evolved and impacted the decisions I make. I'm trying to reflect back on the early 20s. I think I just take life more seriously now, too. In my early 20s, I was just having fun.
Yeah. I mean, in what ways do you take life more seriously? Is it along the same lines of Trey saying, oh, these are the things I've been wanting to do and I'm just aligning more to those?
I think it's like along the lines of, oh, like, how do I get motivated and how do I connect to that part of myself and like how do I actually tick, not how do all these people that I'm reading their books tick, like, right, what actually works for me, you know? And I would say in my early 20s, I was just following people and their advice. And now I'm just doing me.
Yes.
And so there's a very big difference there in thought processes and decision making. So I could definitely feel that evolution when I reflect back
totally
to like 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah. I love that, man. Like, I feel that's happening for me right now. But I'm going from this point of where I've been seeking the confidence from other people. I've been seeking the path from other people, and then this past few weeks, actually in particular, have been a big transformational period for me. Where I'm like, no, man, start making some decisions yourself. Like, what do you really want? What does it look like? Discern in this moment whether or not you want to go that way or this way, and you don't need to ask somebody else to validate your confidence and your direction. Just make a choice and go for it and own up to the failure if it's a failure. Learn from it and move on. Don't get caught in it. But this idea of needing somebody else to like kind of pull you forward or lead you or make you confident about your choices versus I'm choosing and I'm confident that whether I fail or succeed, that I'll choose again and do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, maybe 5 to 7 years ago, I was part of a men's group, I guess. It was like a weekend group therapy thing. It was super fun. But I kind of came up with this thing, a cadence. Do you know, you guys ever listen to Tony Robbins? He always talks about like using rhythms and stuff to help bring you back. Anyway, there's this thing I had my friends and myself do where like you make a fist and you beat right above your heart on like a, I don't know, just a slow rhythm. And you chant like, I am a man and this is how I choose to live. And you just say that over and over. And like, I would do that when I was having difficult times of like, oh, this is a really hard decision. But like me declaring like, this is what I'm choosing, it really helped.
Yes, so, it does. I can tell you're kind of like, should I say this on this podcast? Will people think it's ridiculous? But I'll be the first to say that I will run into the yard and stomp my feet into the earth and throw my arms back and yell just to get out of that place of fear and anxiety and sadness or whatever, if I have to. So a practice like that, like beating on your chest or even, you know, real slow and rhythmically. I saw it in Wolf of Wall Street, something very similar. I never knew if that was true from the story of Jordan Belfort or not, but I was like, yeah, that's like just really getting yourself in the state.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah. Matthew McConaughey would do that prior to the start of a scene, and the director liked it so much that they kept it. They actually put it in the film because of that. He would do that exact same thing.
Nice. Yeah. And so whatever you have to do to get yourself to that place of embodied confidence, dude. And I think that's the I won't get into the what I think, but yeah, I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, it's a little off the traditional path, I guess, but having two or three guys doing that with you, there's some sort of resonating power that's very encouraging.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Timothy, have you had an opportunity in the last 2 months to interview many people, or have you been hunkering down with the rest of us?
Yeah, so I've been hunkering down. I haven't done interviews in a year and a half, I think it's been. Last year, I pretty much got derailed because I was riding a skateboard, a longboard, to go get groceries, and I crashed and fractured my skull. And so that took me out pretty much most of 2019. I'm hoping to get back on the horse.
Yeah. One, that's scary. I'm glad you're okay. Have you fully recovered?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Good. I was curious how people's answers have changed or would have changed in the past 2 months, where people who, or men who generally identify with their work, are unable to work. You know, how does their outlook on who they are, who they've become, change when something they've so closely identified with for the better part of their adult life is taken away from them?
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, your experience over the past few years can help lend any wisdom to that. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. When you're talking about that, I don't see it as a principle or a belief that's easily moved. It makes me think about, the saying, it's hard to churn a big ship, you know? And so like altering people's beliefs on who they are as a man or whatever, take something quite traumatic or really strong. But on a society level too, I haven't honestly seen a lot of shift outside of politically and on social media. People aren't as focused on toxic masculinity as they were in the previous years because we're in the midst of a pandemic. But I haven't seen a real shift in people's answers or interactions on the topic, which I haven't thought about, and reflecting on that's actually interesting.
So, yeah.
when you just, I want to hear your, what do you think of toxic masculinity? What does that mean to you, being so close to working with all these people? What does that look like?
Yeah, toxic masculinity, it's a sensitive topic because it's kind of like a clickbait-y kind of word. But acknowledging toxic masculinity would mean you have to acknowledge healthy masculinity, and then you'd have to agree upon a spectrum of qualities that those fulfill. Mm. And most of those qualities, they just attribute to all human beings and aren't specific to one sex or gender. And so I struggle with like defining what toxic masculinity is, because it's essentially just human beings not being good human beings. And all the attributes that I could find people to identify outside of a specific type of sexual abuse would apply to women or people who don't identify as men, I guess. So that's my struggle with a lot of writing about masculinity and about what is healthy masculinity and what is toxic. It's just like, are you a horrible human being or are you a good human being?
Sure. Like,
that's kind of, I'm not sure if that's,
that makes sense. Yeah. And I'm curious if you've considered weighing the counterbalance by interviewing people on what their definition of femininity is, kind of as the counter to that, or if you know somebody who has done that and if you've learned anything from that, or if that's just not something that you've really considered in the past.
Yeah. So I've had a lot of people ask me to do that, and, or like, why don't you have a project doing this, but just for women? And I'm like, well, I'm a man and this is just what interests me. So if you look at it like I make jeans for men. And if women want to wear it or use it for something, that's great. But that's just my target audience.
Absolutely.
And I haven't met anyone who's doing something similar for women. But I wish they were, or having just like a very neutral discussion around the topic. I wish there was that. So,
yeah. Yeah, this is shaping up to be a really awesome conversation. I just love the different facets that, you know, we're going down. And I keep finding interest in your accident. We talked a bit about that, you know, via Messenger. We spent a couple of days going back and forth about some of your experience, and I got to read your blog post about overcoming it. And you know, what feels contextual to this conversation is this: I'm wondering if when you woke up, I imagine you passed out when you fell off your skateboard, and maybe you woke up in like a hospital or something, or in an ambulance.
Yeah, there's like very few memories from 3 to 4 days.
Yeah, and so you come to, and you're coherent, and now your ego, let's say, you know, comes back into full force. Did you feel some shadows of your masculinity coming up when you were in a place where you had to be almost fully taken, what I imagine, fully taken care of?
Yeah, it was awful. Contextually, like, I hit the back of my head right above my right ear. And so depending on like where you hit your head and how hard you hit will influence different aspects, and every head injury is different, and the side effects. But for myself, I later came to find out months down the road, like, it had dislodged like my emotional regulation. And so I was essentially just an asshole to everyone around me when I came to. I was angry that I had been injured. You know, my mom like got flown down to take care of me, and I just didn't want anything to do with her. So the first week or two, I wasn't honestly that coherent. And I've gone back and apologized to people for things I may or may not have done, because I just don't remember. So there's that aspect, but being taken care of is one of the most humbling things, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
being that I'm an independent guy who likes to travel and do things on my own, it was very, very humbling to meet, like, my best, one of my best friends, Scott, came and just, like, took me out to get fruit smoothies every day and, like, made sure I had somewhere to sleep and all sorts of stuff. It was crazy.
Man, so. I feel really grounded in your experience, because there's a lot of sadness that comes up for me as I imagine being in this place, and then looking back, you know. So first of all, I appreciate you sharing it, and at any point we can reroute the conversation. But something that's, you know, important to me is rebuilding, you know, to revisit the builder terminology, but rebuilding when I've made a mistake. And for me, I don't necessarily never necessarily had an accident to where I unconsciously became an asshole, but I do sometimes unconsciously become an asshole, and I do and say things that I regret and that maybe hurt people and that weren't true. And so I wonder, you know, for you, what process you've gone through to rebuild positively, and what overarching concepts that you could glean for people who, you know, they're doing their best and they're constantly building, and sometimes they make decisions and hurt people and not ruin their relationships, but maybe, you know, put pressure on their relationships in an unconscious fashion.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, having a crazy injury, even though no one really understands them or can relate to them, it's a great avenue for, like, hey, I'm really sorry. I just didn't know what was going on, and I don't remember this. And if I hurt your feelings or said negative things, I'm so sorry. Like, that's a really weird statement to have to tell people. But in the article online, I really dive into what's considered, like, an overview of shadow work, and so dealing with our dark sides and laying in a bed, being incapable of taking care of my business or myself or anything really, all like my depression, my anxiety, my stress, my anger, so many things were not just existing, they were magnified and they had to be faced, otherwise I would just be crippled. And so what I learned over last year was the sooner I face my issues, the sooner I find relief. Contextually as well, 3 weeks before my accident, I had broken up with my girlfriend and I'd gone back to the States to work because my business hadn't stabilized yet financially. So I was going to do some work. And so I was struggling financially. My business was struggling. I had just gone through a breakup and then I smashed my head and I couldn't take care of anything. And the one woman I wanted there, the one person I wanted to be there, couldn't be there because I had just broken up with her. And, like, it was not a fun state to be in by any
means. Yeah. So. I imagine there's a new level of, and I'm relating this to my own experience, so, you know, whatever's true for you, but I imagine there's this level of a new level of self-love and self-worth and self-esteem that's built from a place where you don't have places to go find self-worth and self-esteem. So you couldn't necessarily just call this woman up. I mean, you could have, but you couldn't call this woman. You couldn't go build a business. You couldn't go build a shelf to feel accomplished in some way. And so there's a lot of shadow work. And then also maybe developing a new sense of self-worth that isn't derived from excelling or you know, externally, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. And also learning how much people truly care and love about me too.
Wow.
Like, there's nothing more exposing of who's truly your friend than you going through hard time.
Wow.
And, like, who's actually there for you through that.
Right.
Like, that changes everything. I would say though, like, my perception and a couple things I clung to were, like, the hero's journey, you know, going through the cycle of a story. There's always parts of darkness, and then they slay the dragon and they return home. And sure. So that was really encouraging. But also, like, as an electrician, one of my worst failures in my electrical career was the very thing that empowered me the most to overcome all my other obstacles throughout my time as an electrician. And so what I've clung to and hold to is that that darkest year will be something that will empower me and help give me the strength to face difficult times. So,
yeah.
So, Timothy, you Ernie mentioned you're working on a book, correct?
Yeah,
that's great. Yep. So is it focused around your work, about what it takes to be a man, or is it, what's your focus?
Yeah. So a, publishing company essentially reached out to me and wanted me to write a book for teenagers on what it means to be a man. And so it's kind of just a very, quick overview of a lot of arenas of life. Even though I prefer to jump in more in depth into like one specific topic, this will be a good general touch on everything from, you know, how to change a tire, to defining your values.
That's great.
So, I never had anything like that when I was that age. So I'm hoping that it brings value to teenagers, but it's definitely not like something that I would be like, man, you really got to read this right. If you want to figure out what it means to be a man. It's more of just like, these are really practical things that like a kid who doesn't have a dad
Absolutely.
Would like to know.
Absolutely. Nice.
So are you currently engaging with younger men right now, people who don't have that direction? Do you speaking events, anything that helps the younger generation move forward?
Not at this time. I'm hoping that once I get this book published and out there, that opportunities like that may be open. 'Cause I do genuinely care specifically for guys, young men who don't have father figures in their life.
Right.
And, like, navigating. And also young men who just have father figures who don't exist or, you know, whatever. But I do care about that because it's just any man I've met up until even in their 40s crave to have an older male figure in their life speaking into them.
Yeah.
And so it's like the lack of that just saddens me.
Man, I would love to, once you come out with this book, I would love to see a follow-up to that where you're addressing men who are our age who have not had that structure in their lives and still don't know how to operate as adults because of that lack of father figure in the past. I think men of all generations and all ages would truly benefit from that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this longing in us to be fathered and to be mentored and to be cared for. And that deficiency can cause a lot of pain. And so that would be interesting to address and to like encourage solutions.
Certainly.
Yeah. And there are countless programs that you could Google, you know, and get all these results. And I have some in my mind that I would trust to send people to. But I wonder if you could, you know, you mentioned going on a retreat in the past, and maybe you are resourcing other programs or men's work at this point, that if somebody's listening to this and like, yeah, that would be really nice, but I don't have any idea what to do, directions they might take.
Yeah. I think on a very foundational level, finding a therapist is just nice. A really great place to start. And be picky about your therapist too. Like, don't just like hitch up to the first thing that shows. Like, find someone that you align with. I think that's a huge place to start. There are quite a few men's retreats out there. I haven't personally been on some of them. I want to go on more. I like to be my own test, like hamster or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
So there was one when I was more in the Christian world called The Crucible that I went on. That's a very experiential, immersive, like 48 hours, I think, or 72 hours. That was really, really encouraging for me. Very different. Yeah. So it's very similar to the Mankind Project, I believe it is called.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
was less. It's more spiritually neutral, but those are great programs for. They do work for some guys. Other guys hate them. So I recommend it. I think it's fun. I've also done like virtual male men's groups. I've done all sorts of stuff. So I'm trying to find one that's more spiritual, like in a neutral way, but like finding your spiritual side.
Yeah.
I think I found one. It's called Illumen, I think is how you say it. And I've wanted to go on that one, but
nice.
Haven't done it yet. So
yeah. I would highly recommend you check out John Wineland, and anyone listening, I talk about his work all the time, but I spent 9 months in his program, the Embodied Men's Leadership Training, last year. And it was a highly intense experiential, spiritual journey that gave me probably 10 to 20 years. I'll never know of maturity in my life that I probably, having not been in that program, would have spent the next half of my life developing the skills and the traits and the understanding of myself that I did in 8 or 9 months. And he does weekend retreats, and he does online virtual retreats now. And then the other one is Every Man, in addition to the Mankind Project that you mentioned. Those are solid programs. I haven't been in them, but I have plenty of friends who have been in them and have experienced them. Something about getting together with 10 to 50 incredible men that are focused on becoming their best, like that alone would do transformational things. But then having leadership like Every Man, Mankind Projects, hopefully Illumin, I hope you end up doing that and can shed some light on that. But then having the leadership amongst those men, it just does incredible work.
Yeah. Most of those groups are really good at creating a container or space with strict rules. And like going into that, I think it's great for men who don't have friends too. It's a great way to go and meet other men who are trying to better themselves, and you can like align yourself with them as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. You know, I feel like we're coming to a nice ground here with everything. This has been absolutely incredible. Trey, what kind of questions, you know, before we leave, that do you feel like you might have, or if any?
First of all, Timothy, whenever you make it back to the States, would love the opportunity to get together. It's been eye-opening to chat with you. I love the work you're doing, and I highly encourage people to check it out. Where is the best place that people can find information about you, whether that's social media, website, whatever works best for you?
Yeah, so going to the website is the best at this point, themaneffect.com. And like even for people who've listened who, like when we were talking about the question, if they had a word they wanted to share, like there's a place on the front page to submit, like, hey, this is the word I would choose and this is why. And so
nice.
I encourage people to check out the website. That's the best way to find me and talk to me.
Awesome. So, well, beautiful. Like you, I have a question that I like to ask people. I'm a big reader. It's one of my favorite things to do. And so I am always curious, when we're talking with people who are highly influential and highly motivating like yourself, if you had to pick one book that you would credit for being the most life-changing book you've ever read, what would that be?
Yeah, so I would use The Kingdom of Heaven is Within You by Leo Tolstoy.
Hmm.
It's his only like one book that's non-novel, and supposedly it's supposed to be the book that inspired Gandhi and Martin Luther King to be pacifists.
Wow.
But it's a really fascinating book and took approach to thought processes. It just challenged me in a very different way. And I really appreciate when I feel mentally stretched or challenged. And that was a very notable book for me on that level.
That's amazing. Nice. I had not heard of that before, so I will certainly be checking that out. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a bit dense.
That's but it's okay. Great. That's okay.
Yeah, those are the kinds of books that I personally love, where you read a sentence and you have to spend the next like 2 days thinking about it before you can read the next sentence. Because if you read the next sentence, you're like, what does this even mean? You really have to contemplate, or at least that's what I'm assuming you mean. You really have to contemplate it and take your time with it.
It's meat, for sure. For sure.
Cool. Man, this is great. You feel good, Trey? Anything else at this point?
I think that's it. Timothy, yeah. Thank you again, sincerely. We truly appreciate you making the time for us. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Again, Timothy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to check out themaneffect.com. Sign up for his email list so you get notified when he's got new work out. And also, you'll get notified when his book hits the shelves. And on top of that, there is a form on his website where you can share what your idea of a man is, what your one word is. And the more we do this podcast, the more I'm learning how dynamic of an answer that is. I've never really considered that myself, as the definition becomes so in flux in our day and age. And so it's something I'm considering a lot more, especially after this conversation. So again, Timothy, thank you for opening my eyes and hopefully a lot of other eyes as well. Last but not least, again, this episode is brought to you by the Mosaic Life Circle. Sign up at onemosaic.life to be notified of brand new episodes, guest announcements, contest announcements, and merch deals. And also this Tuesday, make sure you check out our Full Circle television debut on Instagram, where we will dig more in depth with one of our previous guests. Again, we are at One Mosaic Life on Instagram. Our website is onemosaic.life. And last but not least, if you've enjoyed what you heard here, sharing this is the best compliment we can get. Share it with a friend, share it with a colleague, a neighbor, a sibling, anybody who you think may find value from Timothy's insight and his work. You can find the link at onemosaic.life. And again, thank you so much for listening. We will see you again soon. Be well.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.